We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Something important, but I shouldn't be saying it on podcast. Dynasty. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of NitrateCast on Rotoviz Radio, brought to you by the Blue Wire Network. Yes, we're live. Yes, we're kicking. We're not punching. No, we're not that angry. NitrateCast, we're back and better than ever. We went on a hiatus of sorts. Lots of different things going on in the lives of Nathan and Dan. And Rotoviz probably forgot we existed. So I hope you're hearing us and listening to us. And Dan, how are you? We're doing a Dynasty Fantasy Bowl podcast today.
Yeah, it's weird being back in this chair, looking at your beautiful face and talking about hopefully never tight ends, but maybe other things, even though I'm sure we'll probably talk about tight ends at some point.
I do believe we just spent 14 minutes doing a rundown and we wrote down tight end at least once, maybe twice. But other than that, today we're talking about landing spots. We're going to talk about, you know, we're going to probably talk about more specifically rookies and then kind of rookie mock type stuff over the next 2 weeks. But today we're going to focus in less so on the specific rookies themselves and more so on the teams that they're going to, players that are going to get helped by them, players are going to get hurt by them, et cetera, et cetera. April to into May is the time where dynasty values shake up probably the most, other than maybe the couple days of free agency. We talked about those for the most part on the first week of free agency, and then we went away forever. So let's get into the show today and we'll hit on what we got. First, we're going to talk about quarterback to the Patriots. Who does it help? Who does it hurt? It helps, I guess, Ramondre Stevenson, the best dynasty asset among those RBs, wide receivers, tight ends right now. Is it Hunter Henry? I mean, that's a stretch, but who is going to be helped by an incoming rookie quarterback, if anyone?
Well, I think them bringing in Antonio Gibson is going to be a nice little addition that, and I know that it's going to be a different team, at least from like the fundamental standpoint. This isn't a Belichick led team anymore, but I still feel like their bread and butter are kind of those scat backs, get them out in the open and let them work. So while I do think that Ramondre Stevenson is pretty easily the best player here, I think Antonio Gibson can kind of be your pseudo Danny Woodhead, type player where he's playing a little bit more wide receiver. He's still getting some touches in the backfield, but I also think it's obviously going to help whatever tight ends are going to be in play. Juju Smith-Schuster, if he returns, I can't imagine that's going to be the case, but DeMario Douglas led the team in targets last year, which isn't, you know, a huge wow number, but he had 79 targets and that led the New England Patriots, which is pretty sad. They just had a lot of guys getting between like 30 and 60. So it was kind of a crapshoot as to who was getting what, but I can't imagine that they're going to stay pat and not add some kind of depth. But again, historically, Patriots not great at drafting wide receivers. They more or less kind of go after their guys. And again, it's not Belichick anymore, but it kind of seems like they're still following the same path because, hey, it used to work. And even though Bill's gone, let's keep doing it. So who does it hurt? Probably no one. Who does it help? Probably no one.
Yeah, I mean, the theoretical would be it helps a wide receiver tight end that they select in rounds 2, 3, and 4. Maybe a Ben Sinnott seems like a Patriots player type. But yeah, I'm a big fan of investing, and I don't know, I don't have any data to back up the wellness of these results, but when you have a young offense like that, like a Stroud, Collins, Dell, when you have a group like that that's coming up together, I like to invest in those guys because as one of their value rises, pretty much all of them rise.
Yeah, I think it, as much as people are going to want to draw lines from like the young Houston to all of these teams that are kind of in rebuild mode, Houston was working on the rest of their team first and then kind of fell ass backwards into like the Tank Dell and Nico Collins. And they took their shot on CJ Stroud and it worked out. So I mean, that's going to kind of what has to happen with some of these other teams that are hoping to just find it. I don't think the Bears are in that category. I think they've got a lot of weapons now where whoever goes in, we assume Caleb Williams is going to be ready to thrive. You look at Washington, they've got a plethora of wide receivers and a halfway decent defense. That team's looking okay. The Patriots really are the outlier in this list of teams looking at quarterback. Minnesota Vikings, you know, even though, they don't really know what they're doing at running. Well, they have Aaron Jones, I suppose. They brought in Aaron Jones. They still have Justin Jefferson. Hopefully that contract gets figured out. Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson. That's, I mean, option one, if as far as I'm concerned, to go into an offense as a rookie quarterback. Whereas New England has, I mean, they probably need to start elsewhere. I think it makes the most sense for New England to trade out of this spot and worry about the rest of the team and go find a quarterback in a couple of years, because they're probably 3 or 4 years away from even being able to be a 500 team in the AFC East, let alone trying to compete for a playoff spot. So I think that even though quarterback is obvious as a need to the Patriots, I still think they trade out of that spot and worry about everything else.
You think the Patriots aren't selecting one of the big three quarterbacks?
I think they fully trade out of the area where quarterback's going to be an option to get one of the guys that they like. And then they potentially are in the play for the Bo Nix, the Michael Penix, even maybe someone a little bit deeper than that. You look at, you know, like the Spencer Rattlers and, you know, those kinds of guys.
From a team building perspective, the Patriots are an absolute mess. And I think that it's probably best for them to trade out of it and try and gain at least a first round pick somewhere else in 2025 to potentially build up, trade up if they need to for that, even that draft, even though that draft class is looking weak at quarterback. But obviously always depends on what kind of haul you're getting. If you're getting a second round pick to go from 2 to 5, no, you're not doing that. But if you can get a first and a second and a third, that's something that you're more entertaining. So,
or to be more specific, they're going to get 11, 23 and a 2025 first for 3, which is from the Vikings, because to me, that one makes the most sense. It makes sense for both parties. That puts New England in a really good spot to either get an offensive weapon or one of the best defensive players on the board. And then at 23, they can essentially do the exact same thing or look to move out again from there and continue to add capital. So they're going to have a couple of firsts in 25. They're going to have a couple of firsts in 24 when they trade down. It's just going to be, you know, if they have to give something back, which is probably where Minnesota is still standing on business, because they probably are realistically the only team that has the ammo to get into that spot that is going to be targeting a quarterback. So they're probably just kind of holding strong on that value and maybe asking for some other piece in return, maybe like a third or something to go along with it. But we'll see how that all breaks down on draft night. I can't imagine that anything happens prior to it going Caleb Williams 1, Jaden Daniels 2, just to confirm that the Vikings aren't losing out on what I think is probably Drake May.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's move on to, so that's the early quarterback talk. That's not the more obvious ones. wide receiver. So the two big, quote unquote, landing spots for wide receiver early on, aka Marvin Harrison Jr., are looking at the Cardinals at 4 and then potentially the Chargers at 5. So let's zone in on the Cardinals here. So let's imagine a world where Marvin Harrison Jr., because he is the wide receiver one in all pretty much all circumstances, goes to the Cardinals. How does that impact this offense? How does that impact him as a prospect?
Well, I mean, it's going to be good all around. I think, are there better spots for Marvin Harrison Jr.? Probably. Is there better spots from a volume perspective? Probably not. I think if Kyler Murray is healthy and you know, that the team is just even mediocre, he's going to be on par to, you know, set all kinds of the rookie records, be up there. I would say, you know, 1,200 yards plus is easy, but it's going to depend fully on Kyler Murray and A, his health, B, his state of mind, and C, what the rest of the team does. And if this they can kind of continue to build on last year where they started to look a lot less like a Cliff Kingsbury team and a lot more like the Cardinals we kind of have been expecting. So I still think that they're probably going to look at adding a running back, which I'm sure we'll talk about later in the show. Does Marvin Harrison coming in really hurt anyone here?
It depends on how excited you are about like a Michael Wilson type. And then the other, probably the one that it could impact, but then you're balancing the question of how much does a better offense help a player versus how much does, you know, less targets hurt a player. So like Trey McBride, he would be, you know, the player that is probably target 2 after Marvin Harrison Jr. in a Cardinals offense. So does the fact that he becomes quote unquote target 2 hurt, or does the fact that the Cardinals offense scores probably like 10 to 12 more touchdowns a year, does that end up helping Trey McBride? I lean towards helping a little bit, but maybe lowers the volume overall.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that it hurts. Trey McBride was the team leader in targets last year with 106, and second and third are Marquise Hollywood-Brown, gone, and Rondale Moore, gone. Then you look at Michael Wilson with 58, and Zach Ertz, 43, Greg Dortch, 41, James Conner, running backs, et cetera, et cetera. Marvin Harrison immediately comes in and is looking at, you know, 120 to 140 targets just based on what Hollywood Brown and Rondale Moore left. I think Michael Wilson gets a slight boost as a wide receiver too.
There.
He got traded, did he not?
Oh, it's Atlanta. Yep.
Yeah. So I mean, Michael Wilson, I think at the end of the day, goes from wide receiver 3 to wide receiver 2, and you know, it could end up being a good thing for Michael Wilson because we saw some flashes out of him too, but I don't think anything affects Trey McBride really at all. I still think he's going to be a top 5 dynasty tight end. It'll be interesting to see how much of that share that Marvin Harrison Jr. kind of commands rather than, you know, gets the luxury of, because I do think that he's going to draw a lot of targets early and often because he's just going to be open.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's move on to wide receiver for the Bills. This became the hot talk once Stephon Diggs was traded away for a 2025 second to the Houston Texans. Now there is little to nothing. Gabe Davis went to the Jaguars in free agency. You have Khalil Shakir. You have a couple other ancillary pieces, but there is no alpha outside of maybe Dalton Kincaid. You're kind of looking at similar offenses, except for, you know, Kyler Murray probably isn't as electric as one Josh Allen. But you know, you have like these ancillary pieces, the Michael Wilson types, the, you know, the Khalil Shakir types, and you have a big name tight end in McBride and Kincaid, but they're just looking for a wide receiver 1. So is that wide receiver 1 all but guaranteed to be like a late first round Adonai Mitchell type? Do you see the Bills making a big swing trying to get up to the top 12 to potentially get Romo Dunze? Where do you think the Bills stand on with acquiring a wide receiver 1?
Well, you say they have no alpha. I say not only do they have the alpha, they have the beta, and they have the omega, and all three of those people are the same in Curtis Samuel, Nathan. Curtis Samuel to the freaking moon. Everybody get on board. I still think that they're going to draft a wide receiver early, yes. Trading up, not actually a bad idea, I don't think. They could use some of the ammo they got from the Diggs deal to, you know, move up a few spots, move up wherever they need to. But I think that they could even just stand pat and load up in the second round. They can get there's a lot of depth here, right? So I mean, why not just stay and not waste some of your extra value that you were given through the Diggs trade and just kind of take best player available at all of those spots, unless there's somebody that they really love who I could see them moving up to get one of the top three or four guys. But I think where they're at is probably going to end up being one of the kind of middle tier guys that most years would be one of, you know, the mid first round picks rather than at the end of the first round. So, I still think that it doesn't matter for Josh Allen. Whatever's going to be out there is going to be fine. Dalton Kincaid, I think, is going to have 1 year here where he just has the absolute massive role. I do think Curtis Samuel matters, and I do think whoever they draft is going to matter. Khalil Shakir does not. All of the Twitter nerds and all of the dude bros that really want him to be a thing, knock it off. It's Curtis Samuel, the rookie, and it's Dalton Kincaid.
And then before we move on to our next landing spot talk, we weren't on the airwaves when Stephon Diggs was traded to the Houston Texans, presumably to be their wide receiver one or two. Stephon Diggs going to Houston Texans, wide receiver depth chart, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, and Stephon Diggs. How do you see this depth chart shaking out? Do you see an increase in passing volume for CJ Stroud? I am with the metrics analytics nerds that are like, this doesn't really help Stroud that much, because the problem with CJ Stroud as a fantasy asset was his legs and always will be his legs. He's not poor with it, but he's not going to be at the Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes level where he's getting like 20 to 30 rushing yards a game. So that's going to be the thing inhibiting his fantasy points, not a lack of weapons at wide receiver.
Yeah, I think this Diggs thing is going to be okay for like 6 weeks until all of Dell, Collins, and Diggs have, you know, like 50 targets each, and then Diggs just goes off the deep end, like, you know, the diva wide receiver that he is. I mean, it can't hurt Stroud unless now all of a sudden you've got a wide receiver in your ear, you know, complaining about not getting enough targets, whatever. And then a lot of it will depend on Tank Dell's health and if he's going to be 100% ready for week one. So, man, I don't know. I definitely think it's a downgrade for Stephon Diggs, because I don't think he's going to be like the clear number one here, where he obviously was in Buffalo. And I get them moving on for, you know, contractual reasons and him asking for trades and whatever. But this makes Houston just all that more fun. That offense is going to be potent. Defense is looking strong. I mean, CJ Stroud, legs be damned. I still think he's one of the better dynasty assets as it stands.
Sorry, you cut out. Stroud is, you're saying?
Yeah, I still think Stroud is up there. Obviously, age plays a factor in that. This strong rookie year plays a factor in that. But I think it's very clear that Houston intends to make football as easy as humanly possible for CJ Stroud.
All right, let's move on to the Los Angeles Chargers. They are mocked as a common early wide receiver landing spot, early potential tight end landing spot. How, in the Jim Harbaugh era, how worried are we that Jim Harbaugh is turning what could be an explosive offense with just Justin Herbert into a 1972 rushing offense?
You mean like the Michigan Wolverines? Well, if they draft Blake Corum for whatever reason, then I think we'll all know it's over. I don't know. I think it their first pick is really going to determine how all of this is going to where all this is going to be headed. If they go Malik Nabers, if they go Roma Dunz, I think I would probably rather take Brock Bowers there. Maybe I would take Malik Nabers for sure. But if it's like, oh, we really like this guy, just take Brock Bowers, because he fits the mold of what you're going to try to do anyways. They're a tight end team. Justin Herbert is going to be fine with whoever's playing wide receiver. Another one of those guys that I don't really think it matters all that much. Now, has he always been blessed by having Keenan Allen at his side his entire career? Yeah. But I still think that Justin Herbert was going to be a baller no matter what. So we'll see. Again, we'll see what they do. I do fear that they're going to effectively nerf Justin Herbert and turn him into a game manager. But I really hope that's not the case. We saw some explosive offenses the last time Harbaugh was in the NFL. But I do think that maybe he's stuck in the past, and so will his, you know, offensive schemes. But we'll see. I still think it's going to be either wide receiver or Bowers at that spot. I think Neighbors makes the most sense. But it's Harbaugh, so who knows?
Yeah, I will say I'm probably going to end up buying if Chargers weapons become severely underpriced because we're worried about a quote unquote rushing offense with the ground and pound of Gus Edwards. I'm going to side on the side of Justin Herbert's an elite quarterback and they'll figure it out. I know that thought process has burned us fantasy analysts, dynasty players before, but I don't know. I'm going to take a discount Malik Neighbors. I'm going to take a discount Brock Bowers if the price decreases based off of the fear of Harbaugh running the ball too much.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, before we go into our next topic, now is a good time to let you know it's rookie draft season, it's rookie auction season, it's NFL draft season. During that time, you need Rotoviz, ROTOVIZ.com, promo code RVRadio 2024, promo code RVRadio 2024 gets you 10% discount to all of our content and tools. And we're going to be pumping out all the different box score scout, et cetera, as we go into our, metric scout things. So we'll be talking about those over the next few weeks. So make sure you're getting involved with RotoViz RV Radio 2024, 10% discount.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy can be a place to work through the challenges you face in all of your relationships, whether that is friends, work, your significant other, or anyone. I think sometimes the biggest challenge for me is the relationship with myself. That is something that I have worked on with my therapist at BetterHelp over the course of the last 12 months that I have found be very beneficial. The main ones of those being learning positive coping skills to empower myself to be able to deal with certain situations in better ways than I was previously. I mentioned that relationship with myself. Having the therapy, having a therapist, and having the opportunity to discuss those things has helped me start 2024 with a more positive version of myself than in previous years. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/rotoviz today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/rotoviz.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. So we talked about Bowers a little bit as a possibility to the Chargers. Let's just talk about before we head into the next half of the show, or as we head into the next half of the show, tight end landing spots. So this isn't a huge tight end class. There are the two big-ish ones with Brock Bowers, and you have the tight end too with Jatavion Sanders, and then there's probably a decent dip after that to Ben Sinnott, et cetera, Kate Stover, et cetera, et cetera. But let's look at, you know, where do we want Brock Bowers and or Jatavion Sanders or the like to go? right now we have Chargers as a good landing spot because of Herbert, and then you have the downsides of the Harbaugh that we discussed. Cincinnati Bengals have been a prime tight end landing spot basically forever. While Joe Burrow's been in town, it's like, okay, we need them to get a tight end. And they've kind of been just skirting by with the, you know, Irv Smith types of the world.
Oh, don't say skirting by and Irv Smith in the same sentence. How dare you?
And then New York Jets, they're a prime short-term tight end landing spot. Not a lot there in that wide receiver core. They do have Mike Williams and Garrett Wilson, but nothing at tight end. So do you have a favorite tight end landing spot? Do you have a place you want Bowers to definitely land that would raise his value in one QB? You know, this draft class is reminiscent of the Kyle Pitts draft class, where in one QB, if Bowers goes 5, you can make a legitimate argument that he is 102. Like, there was no Marvin Harrison Jr. per se in that draft class, or there was
Jamar Chase, and Najee. It was Jamar Chase,
but guess what? For some reason, people were like, he was dropping footballs in August, so we were dropping him. So that's why people were drafting Kyle Pitts 101. That was dumb. But all intents and purposes, 102 could be Brock Bowers if things fall correctly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, draft capital, as you are famously known for. I think there's a really wide range on where Bowers could go. I do like the Bengals. They did bring in Mike Gesicki this offseason, and I know maybe he's theoretically washed, but I think that they have other needs that they would fill before tight end. I just feel like there's not a lot of like sexy spots, because everybody that is either known for using tight end or has a good QB already has a tight end or something kind of in place. I think the Titans could be an option depending on how they really feel about Chig Okonkwo. Obviously all those teams in the top 10, aside from maybe the Chargers and maybe the Jets would consider, those two teams being the ones that would consider. I don't really see like a really ideal fit anywhere down the board. Maybe you look at the Bengals at 18, but then maybe you think, you know, Rams at 19. Do the Rams make sense there for someone like Brock Bowers? Or does he make it to 22 for the Miami Dolphins?
I love the Dolphins and I love Tua, but if they need to invest another first round pick into the weapons, Tua, just forget about it.
Well, it's worked every time they've done it, so why not do it one more time?
I think the Rams are an interesting option, but that's definitely a team that is in transition. I looking at some of the younger teams as the Bengals and Chargers would probably be the better option for a tight end. But we'll see how the board falls with those guys. All right, let's talk about some quarterback landing spots. So we're living in a world where we're assuming the first round quarterbacks are Chicago Bears, Washington Commanders, New England Patriots, which you've discussed potentially is not going to happen, Minnesota Vikings via the trade up. So now let's talk about best non-first round QB landing spots. These are, for the most part, QBs that probably aren't going to start day one. If they do, it's because the quarterback situation is very icky or they want to rebuild quickly. We have Rams, Broncos, Saints, Raiders, Giants. We can break this down into two columns. Let's start with short term. If you're looking at Michael Penix and Bo Nix and Spencer Rattler, if you want them to start day one, you want them to start week 6, which of these teams are you looking at as the best landing spot?
Well, I mean, it's hard not to say like the Rams, just because Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, McVay, him working with that young quarterback. We saw how it worked with Jared Goff. Obviously, you get someone that's established like Matthew Stafford that comes in. I think that would be option A, at least.
You're blocked there. Like, Stafford's not getting benched for a day 2.
No, but injured, maybe. But that's the thing, is these guys are going to have to sit anyways. I get that all of like the second tier quarterbacks are like 25 years old. I think Bo Nix is 24, Michael Penix is 23, and then Spencer Rattler is, I think, 32. but these guys are going to have to sit anyways to get used to it. I think it's ass backwards, because they're the older ones and they should be NFL ready, whereas the younger guys should probably be the ones taking a seat Jaden Daniels in that middle ground. I think he's also 23, but the three of the other top four quarterbacks are all 21 years old. So for me, the Rams are going to be like the best spot long term, because that offense is set up so well for future, assuming McVay doesn't go anywhere. The Broncos, I mean, that's a dumpster fire. The Broncos, Saints, and Raiders, I feel like are all just kind of in the same boat. And you could put the Giants there, but I mean, they shot themselves in the foot with the Daniel Jones contract and not going for Saquon instead of Daniel Jones, and now putting themselves in this situation. So I don't even think, I do think that there's a chance they draft quarterback. I don't know financially that it makes the most sense, because they're stuck with Daniel Jones now one way or another, and they're probably not winning anything anyways. So you probably have to just play this out and look at quarterback in 2 years before they can really do anything about it. So yeah, it's tough. I still think it's going to be Rams are going to be my favorite spot for that tier two of the quarterbacks. I would love to see Michael Penix in that kind of an offense. I think he can bring like a Russell Wilson-esque type quarterback style into a McVay offense, which is, I think, a little bit similar to what Stafford brings, even though Stafford's a little older at this point, doesn't have the legs under him that he used to. I still think that 1 year under his belt for Michael Penix in that system could be very good.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that the short term, yes, like in terms of if we're operating under, they're all going to have to wait, the Rams are the best spot. In terms of most likely to get starts or a volume of starts in year one, it would be Broncos and Raiders. Unfortunately, neither of those spots are really attractive weapons wise, and maybe they will be more so after the draft if they draft a couple, you know, wide receivers, tight ends, etc. But yeah, if you have any sort of patience, and you know, all factors being equal, with a Knicks, with a Penix, with a Rattler type, like you want the Rams because they have the weapons and the offense and all those things around him. But immediacy is Broncos, Raiders, and then I just think the Saints and the Giants are an absolute mess. Like, there's not really any redeeming qualities about them at all. Like, you don't get the immediate starter. Like, Carr and Daniel Jones are the starters. And it's not like, oh, if you wait, you're going to get something. You're going to get a starting job, maybe, eventually.
Like, and scurvy, maybe. Like, starting job and scurvy, I think.
All right, let's finosh mm-hmm. off today's show with, you know, usually in Dynasty Fantasy Football, running backs are king. That's not the case in the 2024 rookie class. You know, we just did an entire show on landing spots, and we could end it right now because it really doesn't matter. At this exact moment, it does not matter where the landing spots are for the running backs, because there may be two or three running backs max. That might be an exaggeration, but we'll see. There might be two or three running backs max that go in the first 2 days. And all the data shows that running backs after the first 2 days really don't matter. You know, you'll get the occasional UDFA, but you know, these fourth, fifth, sixth round guys rarely matter. The Aaron Joneses of the world are the, you know, the exceptions. But let's operate in a world where a couple teams do invest day two picks on running backs. Where are the ones we'd be excited about? The Cowboys, pretty much ever since the decline of Zeke, have been the perpetual landing spot Cowboys, landing spot Cowboys, landing spot Cowboys, with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb and company. Arizona Cardinals have James Conner. But I talked about, you know, young emerging offenses. That could be the case with, if you pair a McBride, a Kyler, and a Harrison with a running back. Raiders really have absolutely nothing with Alexander Mattison and Zamir White. You know, what do you see as, you know, what are we hoping for with running backs on draft night?
Well, assuming that Trey Benson goes, you know, in the top 45 picks, I would guess. I think Jonathan Brooks to Dallas is almost inevitable. You get the Texas kid in Dallas. That one seems probably obvious to me at 56, where Dallas would be picking. I still think Trey Benson is really going to be the only guy here that has some kind of standalone value, whereas Jonathan Brooks to the Cowboys is the reason that he has more value. So I could see, you know, I can see like the Giants at 47 entertaining a spot for Trey Benson. But, you know, you look at the Cards picking at 35, probably too early. I guess. The Raiders at 44 makes a lot of sense. They did bring in Alexander Mattison, so maybe they're content with two pseudo-clones of Zamir White and Alexander Mattison to not be able to run the ball efficiently or effectively whatsoever and just keep that team. I guess it would make sense for that team to have two running backs that can't move the ball since they certainly cannot progress as a franchise. I really think we're looking at the Cardinals, the Cowboys, and maybe a sleeper team. I mean, does a team like the Browns come off of a Nick Chubb injury, and do they bring back Kareem Hunt, or do they look to get young there as well?
For whatever it's worth, they did sign Deontay Foreman.
So now they have three guys that are the exact same. Beautiful.
But yeah, you know, the Patriots are always an interesting name there. But yeah, a lot of teams that have occupied RB positions and not a lot of good running backs in this class. So I do think at the end of the day, in one quarterback, we'll probably end up with four-ish first-round running backs in terms of, you know, rookie drafts. And in Superflex, I think it probably ends up being one, maybe two, depending on if we can get, like, a Chiefs running back and a Cowboys running or something. Like, if we can get two prime landing spots in both going day two, that could get two running backs in Superflex. But it's going to be a barren – this is the wrong year to invest at running back in the rookie class.
Yeah, I think that number's about right, especially in one quarterback. I think I think there's probably nine that I would say I would take nine wide receivers over any running backs. I think the only exception to that would be if Trey Benson somehow made it to Dallas at 56. I think that would turn me more on to Trey Benson moving up the board,
Trey Benson to Dallas is the one that could put running back after the first three wide receivers and Bowers. So it would potentially in one quarterback put Benson at 105.
Yeah, 105, 106, even 107, depending on how you feel about the Texas wide receivers, depending on how you feel about Brock Bowers, how early he goes. But yeah, I really think that's. And it's funny that we always have that conversation too. It seems like, you know, the Dallas landing spot for a running back, you know, they've held on with Tony Pollard for so long. Now he's gone. They held on with Zeke for so long. I'm sure there'll be some kind of a reunion there, but I do think that those are the few spots that make the most sense. And maybe even, you know, does Carolina make any sense there? Are they going to stay strong with Chuba Hubbard?
They just don't have the draft capital to really invest early.
They have 33 and 39 and I think one other second.
Even if they have 3 seconds, that team is not good enough to be investing in a running back.
Well, they need, you know,
18 wide receivers before they get a running back.
They're bad enough to trade 11 first round picks to get Bryce Young and offer him no help whatsoever. So maybe they're dumb enough to draft a running back at 39. Is there anyone deeper down the board in the running back group, Nathan, that you're like, hey, with the right spot, this guy could really be like, he could kind of take over?
For me, I think that the only first round potential running backs, I don't know where they go in terms of draft capital, et cetera, but I think it's the three are, and the third one might be me stretching in terms of my Debbie fandom. I think it's Benson. I think it's the Texas running back. I think it's Braylon Allen. I think those are the three that are realistically like first round picks with day two capital and based on landing spot.
Yeah, I think Jalen Wright's probably close to that group. I think Marshawn Lloyd is another guy where everybody either hates him or loves him. No, I don't think he's part of that group necessarily. I would rather have like a Blake Corum over Marshawn Lloyd. But I do think that I think it's Trey Benson and Jonathan Brooks are like the clear one too. And then, yeah, I think you could kind of take your pick of the litter of Jalen Wright, Braylon Allen, Blake Corum. And then you get a little even deeper. You know, Bucky Irving is kind of a fun one. Will Shipley potentially could be a fun one. I just don't know if there's a lot of Devy names up and down this list. Somebody like Jace McClellan, who I remember drafting in Devy, you know, 3-4 years ago, whenever it was. And just obviously nothing happened. Kendall Milton's another one. So I think that this running back class is very shallow, obviously, but I really don't think that there's a lot of like breakout candidates from here outside of the top two or three.
Yeah, for sure. And it'll all play out in a few weeks and we'll shake up and be smart or dumb based on what we just said about running backs. But it definitely, of the four positions in this draft, it has the highest variance. We kind of know what's going to happen at quarterback and wide receiver, maybe a little bit more in the air with tight end, but we have no idea what's going to happen at running back.
No clue. What happens when there's none of them taken until the fourth round? Do we even think about taking running back in rookie drafts?
None. It'll be the at the 208, I select the RB1 who went to Dallas in the fourth round.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. We don't know how teams feel about any of these positions until it happens, right?
Yeah. All right, that's wraps up for this week. We'll talk to you guys next week. Good news.